So if we could, you've got the thing. Good. If anyone has any questions for the Satsang Bowl today, that would be great. So I'll explain a little bit the way this works. It's usually quite informal here. There's a teapot on the stove if you want tea. There, just put on some water, and there's plenty of tea in the cupboard to help yourself. And then the way this works is people will come in with questions, whatever questions they have. They write down the question, put it in the satsang bowl, and it gets addressed as we go along. If there are any questions or comments along the way, you just grab a microphone and we'll go. So this is pretty easy. Just kind of go with the flow satsang. And if we don't have any questions for the day, we come in and we do a meditation and you go. So I don't come in with any canned speeches. So namaste and welcome to everyone that's here today. It's very nice to see you. Nice to see the new people. Thank you for coming. And we'll just get started with the questions. Oh, this is a long one. This isn't a question. This is a book. Since I asked questions about healings and pain last week, very recently the intensity of my interaction with patients zoomed higher. Eyes locked, intense interest, no stray thoughts. I wondered if this is helping people more. Is it draining of my energy? I had no apparent control of this. I would say that at this point that you're becoming just a little bit more in tune with others. You know, your own shields and things are going down. So, yeah, this can happen along the way. Also, part of the path in Kundalini, sometimes what will happen is you'll, like I said, at one point I had a lot of where I was doing a lot of healing things, and you could actually feel what's going on in another person's body. And when you are opening and you're really looking at this person, and part of this comes, and you'll see that the eyes are the windows of the soul, so to speak. And so, yeah, if you are, in fact, having this, and this is what gurus do. They give darshan, and they look in the eyes, and this is a form of diksha as well. It can be a form of diksha. So there's a transference that can happen at that point. So, yeah, if you are in a state of a calm and a state of peace, and you're looking at this person, some of this can help to transfer as well. And also it helps to break down that barrier, and you can be, as you're saying, more locked in to that person directly and what is going on with them. So it can only help you in your practice. It's very good. I think you'll notice you'll have a lot more patient interaction if you're able to connect with them, if you're able to connect more with them. So, yeah, that's a very good thing. Yay. It means you're opening up. Some of these blockages are coming down, so that's wonderful. So, yeah, just continue to allow that to unfold. That's very good. And as you're going and you're allowing that blockages to go down, just allow yourself to open more, and you're going to, sometimes you'll have some insights more as to what's going on with them as well. So that can help. That can also happen. If it gets too warm in here, you can open that door a little bit. If it starts to get too stuffy for people, that's fine. So far, so good. It has a tendency to get warm in here sometimes. So, just in case. It makes a buzz on the mic. Okay. How do I get beyond duality in relationships? Another tough one. when you're in the middle of path until you reach realization and everything falls away and there remains non-duality or only one, until that point, what you do, and if you are having relationship with a partner, you see your partner as absolute, they're part of the divine, either Shiva or Shakti. And if you can only see the divine in your partner and let go of the shadow things that are there, you'll find that your relationship will get deeper as you go. There will be more trust there on both parts. There will be more opening there on both parts. It will get just, has to get deeper if you honor and totally respect your partner as seeing that part of the divinity within them, that God essence. If it's no longer about what you're getting out of it, and it's no longer so much me-centered, me-focused, and you honor that divine aspect within your partner, things will take on an expansion. More bhakti, more heart-centered opening is going to take place. More flow is going to happen. Once again, more barriers are going to fall along the way. And the more barriers that fall, more that oneness can take place. How do I see the emptiness in everything? This comes eventually. It's a natural happening once things have fallen away. Once you reach realization, then you see everything as empty in nature. But it's not really something that you cultivate to see emptiness. It's just simply when you go into the absolute and there is no you, there is no anything at that point, only the absolute. When you come back into some sort of a awareness or a consciousness of the world, at first what happens is it becomes like a dream state. Nothing seems to be real. Only the absolute is real at that point. Then things begin to settle. They begin to settle. And then you see that everything is basically empty in nature. It doesn't mean it's without value. It just means it has no concrete solidity. It's empty in nature. Therefore, it's always non-dual. It's always only one. So then you reach that point, which I call the zero-point balance, where Shiv Shakti have merged, where it's just you're coming from a point of total centeredness. So emptiness is not something that's cultivated. If you move into more into the moment of now, then you start to enter more of a timeless awareness, pure awareness, and some of these divisionary aspects begin to fall away. As you're doing more meditation and the mind starts to still, some of these divisionary aspects begin to fall away. Some of the solidity of life begins to fall away. So this is just a part of the path that comes on its own accord as you move deeper and further along in your own journey.
Swamiji, do you think it helps to, as far as seeing the emptiness of things, to see their transient nature in that they have no solidity, so it's as though they're not anything that endures, so in that way they seem to have that quality of emptiness about them?
Well, I would say that quality of emptiness and transient is a little different. I would say that's a little different dynamic. Yes, everything in the world that you see is in motion. It's moving. Therefore, it's transient. Nothing can be held. This is where the problem comes in. People have these desires and aversions. They want to either try to cling to something or push it away. But everything, by its very nature, is transient. It's going to change. If you can learn to step into the flow rather than trying to cling or trying to have an aversion, you're going to find out that things are much more smooth. And you will step into more of that aspect of now, more into that pure awareness rather than bouncing things off of past all the time. But yeah, you can develop to looking and seeing, just looking at the fact that everything is transient in nature.
But that's a little bit different than emptiness.
It's a little bit different than emptiness. If somebody can see things are transient, but they could still be very caught up in it's solid in nature. But when you reach to that point where it's just empty in nature, it no longer has any type of a solidity to it at all. It's a different consciousness, a different awareness at that point. Conceptually, you see, it's a starting point. We work backward from there. Meaning of dreams, especially death dreams. Well, this is another thing that happens. As you start moving forward on the path, your dreams are going to change. You'll have a lot more intense symbology that happens, especially when people are going through Kundalini awakenings. You have a lot of very symbolic dreams. A lot of dreams will happen about fires, snakes, vehicles, which indicate form, which indicate what's going on with you. Death comes up as you start to work on letting go of the ego and trying to look at what is holding things in place. Everything that's held in place is held in place by this sense of I, this identity. So what is this I? And as you start to pull away, you start to try to surrender in this, you feel a loss of control. And then the fears come up. And then a lot of dreams of the death things start to appear. But what you find in realization is there is no death. There is no death. It's the last great illusion. And I've spoken on this many times, that the last thing for me, the moment before, was just this absolute terror that comes, this feel of utter extinction is going to take place if you take one more step, and you're compelled to take that next step and surrender. But yeah, as things begin to fall away, you feel this loss of control. And as long as you're attempting to control, then you have really no control. There is nothing. What are you going to control?
David's been having interesting lucid dreams. He's wondering if it's a predictor that he's going to die.
No, it's not a predictor he's going to die. It's not a predictor he's going to die. What happens is if you face that fear, then what happens? Freedom. Yeah, that's part of the path. When you come on and you have this thing, whatever it is, this great fear that's coming, part of it is to sit there with it and just see it and then surrender. And once it's come and it's done its worst, you find out there was nothing to be afraid of. It unlocks that. It's gone at that point. That's basically like waking up. Okay, and then things become what? Empty in nature. It has no solid base any longer. Yeah. So no, it doesn't necessarily mean an indicator that you're going to die, that you're going to lose the physical form.
He's got, you know, they're all flying in and out of Iraq, and I think he's got another person that's really close to that's telling him he she's having dreams like that too. Mm-hmm. And maybe it's because they're constantly facing death.
It could be as well. It just depends on the whole nature of the dream, what they're dreaming. You'd have to look at the whole dream to be able to kind of sort it out, what's going on with them. But yeah, when you're facing death and things like the big tsunami that just happened, this really shakes the people that are left here. It shakes them to the core, and they have to really start to dig deep and start to look more concretely at things, look at what's happening in their life. It could be related to a lot of things. It could be, yeah. The fear of death, yeah. Oh, yeah, if you're going into, you know, situations where it's possible to lose the life, people can start having dreams of that, you know, manifesting. But his sounds like more that, yeah, letting go of that, facing those fears. If you face that fear, then that's the end of it. It's the end of it. He didn't come. That's fine. What is the translation of the mantra on the Contemplation of Self CD? It means basically that you'll find self in the heart of the lotus, and that is where I'm resting. I am there now. That's basically what the translation, a very loose, quick translation of it means. You're already there. What you're seeking is already in place. It's already there. It's not something you're going to find. It's not the New Age thing where you're going to work your way up to being there. It's already there when you let go of all the rest of the nonsense that's collected around it. Then you find it's always been in place. If that essence was not in place, there would be no life. How to overcome the blahs of having no desires. Paralysis seems to be setting in. Yes, things start to fall away. One can confuse or can go into apathy instead of vairagya. Vairagya is no attachment, not being attached. So as you start going through these shifts and things start to fall away, you're not in the what was for you the normal mode of existence, chasing this and that. That begins to lose interest in that. Going out and partying and getting drunk, you lose interest in that. You know, chasing after, you know, whatever it was that you needed to fill the holes in your life that you thought were holes, they start to fall away. And you see things beginning to fall away. And then people, instead of going into vairagya and just no longer being attached to them. And it doesn't mean, you know, when you're in vairagya, that you don't enjoy things. Like, I'm not attached to these things, but I very much had a great time when we went to the Lion King. But I would have never pursued going out to see it for myself. Once I got there, it was great. You know, I had a great time. It was wonderful. But when it ended, that's it. You know, I don't look for the next big show to go to. You know, so it's a shift that starts to take place. And there is a time when things start falling away and you're starting to withdraw from the world, that you do go through a kind of a dry land where things, you feel like things are losing meaning, and you think, no, things should be enhanced. I shouldn't be losing anything. But first you go through the dry land, and then you come to the where things finally blossom. So when you go through the dry land of more apathy, start to try to develop more bhakti, more gratitude, and just continue with practice. And it will eventually develop, though, into vairagya, where it's not attachment rather than apathy. Once you get to that point, then it's just that still center, that's just that peace, doesn't matter what comes or goes. You don't need to chase something to find happiness. Everything is whole as it is already. It's not filled with holes. It's simply whole. So that's the difference between vairagya and apathy. But yeah, it's difficult when you start to when you start making this journey, because your perceptual awareness is going to go through shifts, your conscious awareness is going to go through shifts along the way.
I've also I found that letting go of expectations of a certain situation, going out with somebody in the town, like, oh, I've been there and done that, I know what's going to happen. Let go of that and be more in the moment of the situation. You have much more fun.
Yeah.
In the moment by moment, even if it's, you know, you broke down on your way to go see The Lion King or whatever, it had a flat tire, you had some experience, you were just there. Okay, this is interesting. Not what I expected, but
yeah, if you can let go of the expectations, mm-hmm. you'll have a much richer experience. This is also doing the one thing at a time, just go with the flow, you know, and let go of expectations. When people come, you know, if they come with expectations, tell people, you know, I can't, you know, I'm not going to meet all your expectations. You need to let go of expectations in the way you think that it has to go. Like the last person that came, they went and took Diksha. In the moment of Diksha, well, I didn't feel anything at that. I said, that's fine. Just go and go home and go do the meditation. The next day he came back and he goes, oh, last night I felt I felt this stirring at the bottom of the spine and I could feel this moving and I saw the cobra come up staring me in the face. I go, well, okay. I go, there's your experience. But I said, you need to start to be open and allow what needs to come, come versus what you think it has to be. Or some people, the kundalini starts going and it goes more into, leaves more of the body element and they're going through more perceptual changes in consciousness. And then they go, well, kundalini stopped. I'm not feeling it anymore. I go, and what type of perceptual awarenesses are you going through? And at this point, they're going through a lot more insight, a lot more. They've come to the point of the path where whatever knowledge they want to have is immediately there. And I say, and you think it stopped? It hasn't stopped. It's just gone into more subtle realm, subtle vibration. It doesn't mean if you're not feeling it in the body that it's not going. It just means there are less resistances now, that there's more flow. So some people feel more body awareness with this. They'll feel it. And I tell them, if you're feeling too much in the body, quit focusing on the body, because you're just feeding that resistance. We're not going to focus on chakras. We're not going to try to push the energy. What we want to do is go through the layers of consciousness and understand that. And that moves your journey ahead much, much more rapidly, if you can do that, rather than doing this body awareness.
I've had time meditating, though, where my body kind of drops away, and I just feel like I'm these chakras sitting, these spinning light, the spinning spheres of light sitting on top mm-hmm. of each other.
And that's fine.
It's no big deal.
No, it's just more phenomena. It's just showing you you're not this physical form. Okay? It's just showing you a little more subtle reality, and eventually even that will fade away. But as long as you're seeing anything like that, neti, neti, not this, not this, not this, not this, keep going, because it's still motion. It's still Shakti. It's still phenomena. It's still divisionary experience. And people can get so caught up into these things, you know, and they want to promote more and more of that. Rather, yeah, it's cool. Wow. It's cool. But the quicker you can get through those things and see what is holding even that in place. What is this I? What is holding this in place? What is this? When you cut that root, then there's only, you go into the nirvikalpa, and from there, then you stay in that sahaj state, or you stay in that zero-point balance state. And the rest of that phenomena then falls away. Before realization, they say there's the mountains and there's the trees, and in the midst of the journey, they become something other. And at the end of the journey, there are mountains and there are trees. So once you enter realization, the rest of all this phenomena and these things fall away. They're not needed. They are simply in place as you're going through this to show you you are not the body, you are not the mind. This world is not this solid thing that you thought it was. So it's there just to work on these perceptual awarenesses, these layers of consciousness that one needs to go through and continue to sweep the mud away until it's clear. So yeah, this is a process of letting go, not gathering more. People want to try to gather the experiences. When they're gathering the experiences, once again, they're covering, they're layering over what's already in place. So we want to come to the point, and Kundalini is good as this, of allowing these things to be stripped away. If you don't gravitate to these things and try to cling, because also they can be traps along the way. This is why all of the sages throughout history will say, you don't chase the phenomena. You don't cling to the cities. Yes, they come up as you're going through this. It's a natural course of it. Many times they will come up, but you don't cling to them because they can be traps of ego along the way. I met one guy. There's this guy in Rishikesh. And one of my students was there with me, and he's coming up, and he was so proud of himself. He said, I'm working on my light body. And he'd go out and meditate, and he wouldn't wear a shirt. It'd be cold out. And he'd come, and he says, I'm just like everyone else. I go, yes, I know you are. Why are you wasting your time meditating on a light body so you can take your body with you? You know, I said, what do you think remains when the body falls away? The subtle body, it's the light body, that's what remains. So all this time you're wasting on that, you could be spending towards realization. Because when the body falls away, all that remains is a light body. So basically it's putting all this effort into into something that's already in place.
Swamiji, could you briefly review what you mean when you say levels of consciousness?
Levels of consciousness. You have, first, you go through this level of consciousness of survival, sex, putting personality in place, what is this I, then trying to more expand out to encompass the world and trying to develop compassion or trying to heart center, and then more at the higher functions of, you know, what you're speaking, what is the reality of that, and it just, you know, keeps going more subtle. Or if you want to understand more layers of consciousness, things that you proceed through, read the Tibetan Book of the Dead. Tibetan Book of the Dead will tell you basically what are the layers, levels of awareness, of consciousness that one goes through on a Kundalini journey. You face it now instead of at death in the bardo realms. You can face it now you go through this. This has been, I picked it up and read the Tibetan Book of the Bed, and I go, this is a blueprint of Kundalini, a blueprint of the layers of consciousness that one can access and goes through.
And it's in your book.
On the journey.
Heaven, from hell to heaven. It's in your book as well.
It's got some of the levels of consciousness in there. But if you really want to go through all the layers, everything that you confront on the journey, read the Tibetan Book of the Dead. It's been around for years.
Didn't make any sense.
Try reading it again. Now it will start to make sense, and especially when the Kundalini begins to awaken and begins to move and you start accessing these different layers of awareness, you'll see that it makes a lot of sense. Perception. From the sense of self, there is the screen of conditioning. Two, from no self and the senses, there is all physical phenomena. Three, what is perception beyond the sense, beyond phenomena? Please explain the levels of perception. Who's written this one? No, I'm not going to scold you. Would you like to elaborate on this a little bit? Because I'm not understanding really what it is you want.
Well, when we see the world through the sense of self.
I need you to use this.
When we see the world through the sense of self, it's interpreted through the conditionings that we have.
Right.
That's who we think we are. That's one level of perception, as I understand it. Then when we are seen without the sense of self, but still seen through the physical senses, then we see all physical phenomenon.
You're still caught in the sense of self. Even at that point. I mean, in the ego self, yeah.
Even when we're looking through the senses, we're still caught in the sense of self.
Oh, yeah.
So,
what do you think, brings that into perceptual awareness and the senses? It's still ego. It's still based on I am.
The senses are.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And then there's perception that doesn't come through the physical senses. Isn't there? Is there?
There is when in the moment of realization you're not accessing through the physical senses. There is no you there. There has never been a you there. There is only absolute. So it's different. It's different. And then at that point, the conditionings fall away. They're no longer, these conditionings are no longer driving a life. So at that point, it's different. But before that point, as long as there's this identity, this feeling of self, that's all that ego is. It's not being egotistical. We're talking about ego is just this attachment to this idea of I am this physical form that is having these experiences, which is separate from the rest of the world, my life, my desires, my wants, my needs, I. If you really start to step back into witness, eventually this becomes quite apparent that everything that comes up around you is related to I. I want, I don't want, I desire, my needs, me, my, I. This is all this attachment, this ego sense. I need to keep myself safe. These parameters need to be kept. This, my little box needs to be kept into place. This is the I. So eventually what comes is if you're continuing to do this path, you go into witness state and you begin to see this. And eventually then you see that all of these things that are happening, all these experiences are being bounced off this idea of what your persona is. What is this I?
Is witness state than seeing without the sense of self?
No, not necessarily. Witness state is more stepping back, and it's almost a feeling of being in the beginning schizophrenic, because you'll see yourself acting, but yet there's a part step back that's watching it take place, and at the same time can be commenting on what is happening at the same time. But it still comes from a sense of a witness. Something is there witnessing it. There is an I which is witnessing this action of this body. So there's still a sense of I-ness in place in that. The first layer behind the layer. But it's giving a little bit of a cushion where you can start to see things and then be able to comment and question it and see that the same patterns are coming up again and again and again. And then you can finally go to the root of that pattern and question it, confront it, and then cut it so it no longer has such a hold over your life. But yeah, there's further to go than witness. Then one steps into pure awareness, where it's no longer an I identity that feels as if it's witnessing something. But yeah, they fall away layer after layer. Judgment of others, overcoming it. Oh, it's a tough one for some people. Yeah, when you look at others, you have to, you know, realize that they're acting to the best of their abilities based on their conditioned life. If we look back, and I can give some instances. If I look back on my life, my father was not a very good father. Okay? Caused a lot of havoc in my life for a lot of years. Finally, one day, I stopped and looked at it and saw, and I had to have compassion because he just didn't have the skills to be a father. He didn't know how to. For the most part, he was reacting to his past. And most people are reacting out of their past. They don't know what's driving them. So eventually you come to a point of compassion and you look at it and see, yeah, well, does his reacting really have anything to do with me? No. Yes. Yeah, you come to a point where you can see that. If you can confront your own past and let go of things, you become more peaceful within yourself. And you can understand, you know, by your experience that you were acting out of reacting. And so when you break that cycle, you can come to a point where you're not judging as much either. So, yeah, I can speak about some things also. If you've gone through an experience of rape and you know, It's a tough thing to overcome. But eventually, if you stop and look at it, and you're going through flashbacks, you're going through all this nonsense, if you stop and look at it, who's holding it in place? Yeah, an event happened. It was a horrible thing. But who is holding the ongoing trauma in place? Me. Okay? So we look at this and say, why am I holding this in place? Yes, that's not going to change. That happened. But then you look and see, if anybody is doing such an act to people, they're in a hell realm. I can step out of it, but their consciousness is remaining in this hell realm. It must be a tortured existence to be in that mentality. then you begin to develop compassion. And once you can develop compassion instead of hate, then you can start to also break your own cycle of things that was happening. And then when you look and see, yes, who's holding it in place? Me. Well, what is this me? What is this I that's holding it in place? Then you start deeper levels of inquiry. Okay? If this is coming and going in the mind, then it's not there 24/7. What reality really does it have? So what's holding it in place when it's there? Emotions. Emotions create more thoughts. You cling to that and it creates more emotions and you're another cycle. Okay? So you start to, at this point, go deeper and deeper and look and see really mind is nothing but comprised of what thoughts? Thoughts come and go. So really, what solid base does it have? If it's not there all the time, then it really has no existence other than what we are giving it ourselves. So this just comes to a point where you start to go deeper in your own life and deeper into what is holding these things in place. And as you look at it and confront it, eventually it starts to cut some of these knots. And then at that point, once all the knots are cut, a great freedom comes. And it's gone forever. When realization happens, the depression is gone forever. Any of these other things, the traumas are gone forever. The conditionings that ran your life are gone forever. It doesn't matter at that point what comes and goes. There's a still center that remains. And it doesn't mean that life is not going to buffet you, that you're not going to have emotions. You're not going to be like a walking zombie. Yeah, emotions still come, but at that point they become more like a surface level. And you're at the depth of the ocean and you can see what's happening at the surface, but it's has really no longer a lot of meaning for you. You were in that stillness, that depth, that stillness. So that's the difference between still being caught in the surface and being pushed by these waves and having gone to the depths and remaining in that stillness in the ocean rather than being caught in the waves. But this just comes in time with your journey as you begin to, you know, move into meditation and you move into the practices and can start to look center yourself enough that you can stop and begin to question, begin to go deeper, begin to see without closing down and running away, and then you can confront and cut the knots that hold these things in place. And then you stop judging others because we too have been there. Perspectives, true or no? Let's see. Number one, non-dual realization perspective. Phenomena is lila. All is oneness, unity. Yes. Basically, when realization happens, what remains is lila, is the play of God. There's nothing at that moment that is not God. For that individual. Huh? Because your whole consciousness changes. Your whole awareness changes. If you're no longer caught in suffering, you're no longer caught in these conditionings, then for you it's lila. It's play. If you've stepped into the absolute and know that that's the essence of all life, without that there is no life and nothing can be separate from it, duality falls away. But it doesn't mean that you become blind to others' sufferings. But you know that at that moment that all suffering is held in place by our own free will. Unfortunately, everyone has freedom of will, but they don't know that they're holding in place their suffering. They're holding it in place because of out of ignorance, just because they don't know that underneath of all these things they've collected is this pure essence, this pristine essence which is never touched. So you develop compassion. There's compassion for the world because you know they can step out of it. God is not causing the suffering. He's not putting judgment on people. It's just the very nature of the Absolute holds these laws in place. That's all. But we don't have a God sitting up there on a throne that's throwing thunderbolts down at people and, you know, you're a bad, bad person. No, by our actions we cause our our suffering, and not letting go, we continue to hold suffering in place. Number two, dualistic sense of self perspective phenomena is Maya. All is separate conflict, struggle, etc. Please elaborate. Well, we call it Maya or illusion simply because they're caught in the shadows. The clarity is not there. Doesn't mean that it really doesn't exist. We're not speaking of Maya as it has no existence, although there are some schools of non-duality that say that. And I can understand why they say it that way, because when the moment of realization, there is nothing that exists other than Absolute. The rest of it, like I said, feels like a dream state. It has no sense of reality for some time. But then things begin to settle. It was like Sankacharya. Like Sankacharya that wrote the Vivekachudamani and one of the greatest sages of all times. In the beginning, he was totally non-dual. But towards the end of his life, which he died very young, though, but towards the end of that, then is when he wrote all the odes to Shakti. Because you come back into the fragrance, you understand why it is precious here. This is the fragrance. Absolute is seed state. It's perfect. It's whole as it is. But there's no fragrance. Okay? This is why it becomes lila, play. It's the fragrance. This is the next step for mankind, to come out of the suffering and enter into the fragrance. Doesn't mean you have to throw away life. You don't have to throw it away. This is why I want to see sannyas updated. You're not rejecting the world. It moves. You move through to a different perspective. You move through to a different perspective. You start here, you go all the way around, and you come back to where you were. But this time, it's like going like this, and you come back on a different level. Okay? It's a whole different perceptual awareness that takes place. Your consciousness is forever changed. It's forever changed in one moment. It changes. And you never go back to that suffering self. This is why so many times after realization a different name is taken. I have no relationship to that person that was there before realization. I can't even relate any longer. It's like trying to look back on some old film and trying to remember the plot. And I can't. I can't drag up that emotional thing, ties with it any longer, which is a good thing. Because that was a very unhappy person. Up until the moment of realization, there was a lot of suffering that took place in this lifetime. A lot of severe depression, severe, I mean, just horrible. Horrible. But in the moment of realization, it ends and it doesn't come back. And it's been 6 years now. It hasn't come back in any way, shape, or form. None of the suffering. Nothing. Not one day of depression ever again. Not one moment of any of the suffering has ever come back again. So yes, it behooves you to move forward in your path, because it is truly the pearl of great price, which you would not trade for anything. You can't buy that type of peace and contentment inside. Doesn't mean that I don't get tired. Yeah, I'll bitch and complain when the body's just exhausted, because it's just can only do so much in a day. But still, it doesn't matter. Inside is still that sense of stillness, even in the midst of that. So yes, I hope that people this year will really engage themselves in the path and continue to do their meditation and continue to do mantras and confront these things as they come up and continue to let go. Continue forward to realization. And then hopefully those that enter realization and these things have fallen away, then they have the roadmap to really be of service to others, to really then enter into seva and give what can be given, because then you know the way out. Then you know the way out. Bhakti is a very good way. Bhakti and jnana. Jnana also arises out of bhakti. But yeah, bhakti, you need to have bhakti even in jnana, even in contemplation of not this, not this, not this. Still, there needs to be a sense of bhakti, or else it does also becomes more sterile feeling. And I've entered both types of consciousness where it's just straight jnana, where it's whole, it's truth, but once again, it's more sterile feeling than when you have that expansion of bhakti, where it's more that fragrance, more that celebration, more that joy. Because bhakti is expansion. Straight jnana is just totally receded into non-duality. It doesn't carry as much as that total fragrance of the expansion. And so that is all of the questions we have in the satsang bowl. Do we have any other questions? And if not, we will go ahead and take a quick break, have some tea or restroom break, whatever, and then we will do some meditation. We'll do a meditation time. So namaste, thank you for coming.